Good to see that everybody braved the elements tonight. Get out and kind of a, not really that cold, but kind of a damp, wet night. It's good to be able to come together in a nice warm building and study together. And tonight's lesson really dovetails with this morning's lesson. And that we're all talking about contentment. And this morning I had quite a reading from a song called Blessings. And that song, by the way, had about 31 million hits on YouTube, which is quite a few. But I thought about another song, and at first I actually thought that it had a kind of a biblical title. And I misunderstood the title at first. I thought it was Life Under the Sun. But I thought, that's Solomon right there. But no, this here is about another writer, a little bit not quite as smart as Solomon, but by the name of Sheryl Crow. And she had a song, or has a song, I call Life in the Sun. And I thought about the words this here, and I'll just read again if you had some of the words of the song. It said, my friend the communist holds meetings in his RV. I can't afford his gas, so I'm stuck here watching TV. I don't have diddly squat. It's not having what you want, it's wanting what you got. I'm going to suck up the sun. I'm going to tell everyone to lighten up. I'm going to tell them that I got no one to blame for every time I feel lame, I'm looking up. I'm going to suck up the sun. And that line in particular that stands out to me is one is not having what you want, but it's wanting what you got. And that is the idea of contentment here. When you think about happy people in life, and there's a lot of different characteristics that happy people tend to have in common, but I dare say that contentment is one of those, contentment and gratitude. And really those two go together, and that is the happiest people I know, it seems like no matter what the circumstances are, that they find a way to be happy. Whether they're living in a little shack someplace, or they're living in a big house, whether they have all kinds of money in a bank, or whether they have just a little bit, that they seem to be happy and content no matter which situation they face. And that is really what our goal is in life, really is the idea of contentment and happiness and serving God. Now, the opposite of these and the enemies of contentment are things such as the idea of greed, the idea of covetousness, the idea of envy. Now, those things are really the opposite of contentment whenever we have those kind of feelings here. And so when I was looking at the definition of contentment, it said it is defined as a state of being content. Okay. Well, that doesn't tell me a whole lot, but it is talking about a mental attitude we have. It goes on and says, some synonyms are satisfaction, ease of mind are two of those. And so it's not to be confused with the idea of complacency. We're not talking about that, but we're talking about the idea of some kind of serenity, some kind of way of looking at life. And as I was thinking about the Bible and of a person that shows us the opposite of that, I thought about King Saul. And King Saul truly is one of the most saddest people in the Bible. We stop thinking about the place he had, the position he had, the blessing he had, and yet King Solomon was not a happy camper. He's not a happy person. And a lot of that goes in particular with King Saul and David. You know, we read about, and I know everybody here is very familiar with it, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time reading 1 Samuel 17 chapter, but we know the story, right? We know that the army of Israel was lined up against the army of the Philistines, and for about 40 days, Goliath comes out and challenges the army of Israel, send out your best warrior, and we'll go one-on-one, mano-mano, and here wins them, the other side serve them. And for all those days that he would come out and make that challenge, nobody, including King Saul, but nobody would go out there and meet Goliath man to man. Until David shows up. And David looks at this here, and basically David's reaction is, why doesn't somebody go out there? Why doesn't somebody take the mantle and go out there and meet Goliath? And eventually he persuades Saul and the rest of the Israelites, apparently, to let him go out there and fight Goliath. And as he goes out there to fight Goliath, we find in, as he goes out there and kills Goliath, but we find in 1 Samuel 17, verse 48, And notice the wording of David. So it was, when the Philistine rose, it came and drew near to David. And the Philistine, by the way, Goliath, when he first saw David, just thought about, you're sending a child out here, you know, fighting me. Who am I? I mean, he took that as a direct insult. But he goes on and says that David hastened and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. Then David put his hand in his bag and took out a stone and he slung it and struck the Philistine's forehead so that the stone sank to his forehead and he fell on his face to the earth. Now you go ahead and we find, of course, they take Goliath's sword and chops off Goliath's head. So he defeats that. And the result of all of this here was that David then receives all this praise. That David becomes the hero, in essence. And the children of Israel, obviously, I mean, nobody else has gone out there against Goliath, and so they're going to praise David. And as they're praising David, we find that the wording of it was, in 1 Samuel 18, chapter verse 6, it says, "Now it happened as they were coming home, when David was returned from the slaughter of the Philistine, that the women had come out of all the cities of Israel, singing and dancing to meet King Saul with tambourines, with joy, and with musical instruments." Now, so far, so good, right? King Saul's still the one. He's still the commander of the army. He's still the king. But it goes on, "So the women sang as they danced, said, Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s. There's a problem there, right? In Saul's mind, there was a big problem there, because next verse, "Then Saul was very angry, and the saint displeased him, and he said, they have ascribed to David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed only thousands. What more can he have but the kingdom? So Saul eyed David from that day forward." And basically what it means is that Saul, as you heard this here, they had a way of interpreting this song, this praise, and that is David now became his enemy. And that from this point onward, that David was somebody that Saul was always suspicious about, no matter what happened. And although David never showed any inclination at all trying to take over the kingship, he never tried to overthrow King Saul at all. He had many opportunities to kill Saul, and he never took them. But basically, from that point onward, that Saul looked at David and he hated him. He saw him as an enemy. In 1 Samuel 18, verse 11, "Saul cast a spear, for he said, I'll pin David to the wall. But David escaped his presence twice." And this is beside other occasions here they tried to kill him. And so as you look at it, Saul was envious. He wasn't content at all with the situation. And yet Saul, as he liked contentment, had really a lot to be happy about. And in fact, when he think about this here, that among the things he still had to be happy about is that he's still the king. He's still the king of Israel. And not only that, but also that his army had just had a big victory. Now, through the hands of David, primarily. But they was the only one, the ones that fighting that day, that they was going ahead and they went ahead and fought the Philistine. But they had a big victory. And not only that, but David had one victory at this point. And Saul had numerous victories. And so there's a lot that Saul could be look at and think about. You know, one of the biggest enemies I have, the Philistines, just been taken off the board, in essence. That they've been negated by this boy here, by David. And basically, that is, look at it, that Saul could have easily turned around and said, you know what, I praise God for what happened. I'm thankful that God sent David to serve under me, and think about how God had blessed him by making him a king, and how Israel was prospering under his kingship, and he could have simply done that. But instead, we find that Saul was envious of David. And if you think about, again, David's response when he goes out and kills Goliath, notice in 1 Samuel 17, verse 46, before he goes out there and battles him, but notice David's attitude about this. It said, "This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand. I will strike you and take your head from you. And this day I will give the carcasses of the camp of the Philistines to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, that all may know that there is a God in Israel." Did you see something there? David not one time talks about how great he was. The whole idea here is that he was going to focus on God, and that he wanted the people to see the Lord will deliver you. that the people will realize there's a God in Israel. That was his focus. And if Saul had his same focus, it would have turned out a lot different. And so here's the case, again, that have you ever known anybody like King Saul? Have you ever known somebody that may have all these blessings and they yet find a way to find something wrong in life? Something wrong with everything that's going on? And so we have to think about ourselves, and that is what we have. And as we do that, we just realize that when we get basically greedy for things, we want more and more things. And our society is based on a market economy. Marketing tries to make everything appeal to us and tries to make us think that we are not happy unless we have this product. Whatever this product is, we're entering into the Christmas season now. And we're going to have all these commercials on television talk about the newest gadgets, the newest toys, the best clothes, whatever it is you want to talk about. And all they're trying to do is make us think that somehow buying the product is going to make us ultimately happy. And we have to realize the idea of greed and envy and jealousy, all those things, bad things happen if we are motivated by those things. And that's the way you start looking at life. In fact, as we've been studying here in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus, as we talked about this morning, talked about the idea of contentment. That is that we need to be content with what we have. We need to be content with what God provides for us in the Sermon on the Mount. And that's one of the things that Paul speaks about. He speaks about his blessings that he had received. And think about what he talks about as far as what we receive in 1 Timothy 6, verse 6. And I always think about this as really an equation. And that is, now, godliness with contentment is great gain. And so it's not just one by itself. Godliness is important here. And contentment itself is important. But one without the other, there's something lacking here. You have to have both elements. You have to have a godly person who is content. But the result of that is what? He said, great gain. So that's the equation for us here. And as Paul Wright said, we realize that we have to strive to have both. To do things the way God says to do, but also have the right attitude about whatever possession we have in life. And contentment is not always easy. It's not always easy because, again, we have people trying to tell us that we need more. And again, Paul uses himself as an example of this, and we use him as an example of this when he writes to the church of Philippi. So Paul had been in prison. A stinking Roman prison, and I don't mean that just metaphorically, I mean that in every way possible. Roman prisons were notorious that they were dark, dingy places that people often died in. That they did not feed you well, they fed you at all. If you got sick, again, you all will die there. As a prisoner, you were simply baggage to the Roman Empire. And yet Paul, when he talks about this in Philippians 4 verse 12, he said, I know how to be abased. No, I know how I have nothing. And he goes on and said, I know how to abound. I know Paul had received the better things of life. He had at one time been in the upper echelon of the Jewish community. He said, everywhere in all things to learn to be full and to be hungry. Has belly full at times where he had plenty to eat. He had gone to bed a lot of times when he was hungry. And both to abound and suffer need. And so again, the idea to have plenty or to not have really what he needed to have, in fact. But he goes, says, I can do all things with Christ who strengthens me. And so in our lives, we may be like Paul sometimes. We may have everything we want and then turn around and not have anything we need. Or we may lack a lot of things we need. And yet, he said, we need to learn how what? To do, have the attitude, I can do all things with Christ who strengthens me. And that's where our strength will come from. Not from our things. But from basically from doing what Christ says to do. And so a life without contentment. If you think about life without contentment, when we have simple yearnings and dissatisfaction, it brings us harm. What the Bible points out to us. It causes us to do things that are really bad for ourselves. In 1 Timothy 6 verse 9, he said, but those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and in the many foolish and harmful lusts which drown men into destruction and perdition. Now let's just stop right there. That is, you have people that desire more and more things. And he said, and a lot of times they actually do things that are destructive to themselves. We read about the rich and famous. And sometimes you look at somebody, and may this person have, again, plenty to eat, plenty of money, but they decide, you know, they can make more money if they do something illegal. Maybe the idea of cheating on the market, trying to take insider information. Or maybe the idea of, you know what, we can actually make money, more money, if we do something by selling drugs. Or about something else that's illegal in life. Or maybe I have plenty of money, but, you know, instead of maybe getting divorced from my wife, I can actually have her killed. And that actually saves me money in the long run. Yeah, I got hired hitman, but you know what, I get all the fortune then. And people do that. We think, well, why would anybody, and then they get caught and they lose everything. You know, they wind up going to prison. And they think, why is that? Well, because the fact is that they are being tempted, that they are under the impression they can have more. And so it goes on and says, well, the love of money has rooted all kinds of evil. People do all kinds of bad things with money, which some have strayed from the faith and greediness, and pierced themselves through many sorrows. Now, as Bryce says, the warnings to us, as far as having the proper attitude about money, about what things we're trying to do to receive our money. And so we realize money does not bring about happiness. Money does not bring about joy in life. And contentment, if you think if I get something else, I'll be content with that. If you're not content with a little, you're not going to be content with a lot. It's basically what the Bible says to us. And so, again, if you study, read articles by people that are like the servants of the rich and famous, they'll tell you that the rich and famous, like anybody else, except that they have more money, but yet often have more headaches. And so we have to be content with what we have. So let's make go back by application here, and then the lesson will be yours. And that is, as far as being content, we need to be content with the recognition we receive. With what a recognition we have, everyone at one time or another has felt as if they have not received maybe the praise that they deserve. We've all been in situations where we say something like, you know, let's go and let's order lunch from some place we didn't try before, and nobody pays attention to you. And then somebody 5 minutes later says, hey guys, why don't we order lunch in this new place down the street? We had not tried it before, and everybody says, yeah. And you order the lunch, and it comes in, and it's really good, and everybody, what they do? They turn to the other person and says, that was really a great idea. Thank you for saying that. And you left the, you know, standing there wondering, why is it they didn't pay attention when I said that? Or why is it I had the idea first, and nobody really paid attention to me? Everybody's been in that kind of situation. And so we need to be recognized fact that there are times everybody's in that book there. And so don't be jealous of other people. In 1 Peter 2 verse 1, it talks about all these things like malice, you know, therefore lay aside all malice, all deceit, hypocrisy, envy, and all evil speaking. As newborn babes, desire a pure word that you may grow by there. And think, what's the important wording in that sentence? Well, I underline for my purposes tonight, that as far as this passage, is that it's lay aside. There are certain things you have to simply lay it aside. You have to let it be. And cast it off. And that's the way we are. You know, like there, if you don't receive the recognition you think you deserve, maybe, you know, as preachers, you know, there are preachers that will hold X number of gospel meetings a year. It's been said many times that, like, 20% of the preachers hold 80% of the gospel meetings. And I would tell you, as a preacher, it'd be easy sometimes to say, why is this guy over here getting all these gospel meetings and nobody's beating the door down to my house? Nobody's calling me. And it'd be easy to get the attitude of, like, you know, I kind of become resentful of that guy here. He's been saying all these. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. As long as the gospel's being preached, that's the key part here. And so that's the attitude we need to have in life as we go through, because resentment and envy brings misery. All you don't do is only make yourself miserable if you're not content with whatever recognition you're receiving in whatever field you're talking about, whether we're talking about in the factory at work, or we're talking about at school, or whether we're talking about someplace else. And that is Proverbs 14 verse 30. A sound heart is life to the body, but envy is rottenness to the bones. Yes, and begin hurt ourselves. I like this here. And ironically, I thought about the quote, and it always, I think, most of us have heard the quote before. And the quote is, it's amazing what you can accomplish if you do not care who gets the credit. And what I thought was kind of, for me at least, a little bit funny is that when I first saw the quote, I thought, Ronald Reagan said that. And so I did a Google search to make sure I wanted to give the right credit to Ronald Reagan said this. And actually what popped up first was John Wooden said it. And I thought, well, John Wooden said it. I didn't realize that. Then actually I did a little bit further search and it said Harry S. Truman said it. And you know, the thing is, he may not have been the first one to say it. It may have been somebody else said it first. And he just got quoted saying that. And so I have to realize, but that's true. And that is, as long as the good comes about, who cares who gets the credit? We need to be content with who we're with. And I thought about that in a sense of marriages, about being content with your spouse. We live in a day and age where divorce is so common. And a lot of times the reason of that is because somebody starts getting the wandering eye. Somebody starts looking around, this person here is prettier, this guy here is more handsome, or this person here listens better, and you have all these reasons why people start looking around, and the world philosophy is basically, if you're not happy in your marriage, what? Find a new spouse. One of the elders up there of Owensboro was talking about he had gone to his doctor about some medical issues, and the doctor, among the things, the doctor started asking us, well, how long have you been married? And he and his wife have been married for 40 plus years. And the doctor said, you need to get a new wife. And just kind of, you know, just find a new wife. And I'll take care of your problems. No, Mom. You know, that's not going to take care of any of the problems. And the Bible says, first of all, there's only one reason for divorce. And we're not going to study, get into the whole issue about marriage and divorce tonight. But in Luke 16, verse 18, whoever divorces a wife and marries another commits adultery. And whoever marries his divorce from a husband commits adultery. And none of us wants to be in that situation. And therefore, what does that mean? It means if I'm unhappy in my marriage, or something wrong in my marriage, what I need to do, first of all, is I need to realize I have taken these marriage vows that all of us are aware of, all of us realize we do it. And every wedding I've ever done, any wedding I've gone to, basically, we have, you promise to take this person, and then we have all these situations. For sickness and health. Rich or poor. And we do go from, you know, like bad to worse, or worse to good. And basically what we're saying is, I'm going to stay with that person no matter what. And we made that vow before God and our fellow men. And so we realize, have to realize, okay, if I'm unhappy in marriages, I need to honor that marriage. I need to honor the commitment I have made. Over in Hebrews 13, verse 4, marriage is honorable among all, and the bed undefiled. The fornicators and the adulterers God will judge. And therefore, if I'm unhappy in my marriage, what I need to do is I need to work on myself. I need to do what I can to be the better, whatever it is, a better husband, better wife. I need to work as so as to try to make this marriage as good as I can. And if you do that, then things work out better. And so we need to be content with who we're with. Another is, we need to be content with how we worship. There's a lot of people that are unhappy with different forms of worship. And based on the idea of what we want. Now, a good example of this here is Saul. Going back to him. Earlier in 1 Samuel. And that is, Saul was about ready to go to battle against, again, enemies of Israel. And he decides that they're waiting up for Samuel to come and offer sacrifice. So if you turn the Bible to 1 Samuel 13 chapter, and read me verse 9 to verse 14. And there it says that Samuel hasn't showed up yet. And he's waiting and waiting. Samuel, where's Samuel at? And I can almost see King Saul patting his foot on the ground there, saying, where's this guy at? Okay, so it says, so Saul said, bring a burnt offering and peace offerings here to me. And he offered the burnt offering. Now it happened as soon as he had finished presenting the burnt offering, that Samuel came and Saul went out to meet him, that he might greet him. And Samuel said, what have you done? And Saul said, when I saw that the people were scattered from me and that you did not come within a day's appointed, and the Philistines gathered together at Michmash, Then I said, the Philistines now will now come down on me at Gilgal, and have not made supplication to the Lord. Therefore, I feel compelled to offer burnt offerings. And Samuel said to Saul, you have done foolishly. You have not kept the commandment of the Lord your God, which he commanded you. For now the Lord will have established your kingdom of Israel forever, but now your kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sovereign himself of man after his own heart, and the Lord has commanded him to be commander over his people, because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you. And what Saul did basically, or Samuel, you know, King Saul did, is that he knew what God wanted. He knew that he was not a priest, that he was a tribe of Benjamin. And he knew that Samuel was a tribe of Levi. He was one priest that offered sacrifice. And yet, for the sake of expediency, he decided, I'll do this then instead. And we may think, so what? I mean, still offer a sacrifice to God. You're still trying to please God, right? No. Now, God already specified what he wanted. Any change to what God said was not something that God would accept. And today, a lot of times people want something because maybe it's more convenient. Or maybe just because of what they want. Instead of really what God wants. You know, there are people that maybe they like instrumental music. And so that becomes something that really appeals to them. But maybe they like choirs. And maybe their daughter is a really good singer. If they go to this church here, she can be not just a singer in the choir, but she can be one of the lead singers in the choir. And therefore, that's where they go. Or maybe they like something else that the church offers instead. And so they thought, that's where I want to go. And we have to keep in mind, what we want and what God wants may not be the same thing. And in those situations, we have to let God be the one who determines how we worship him. As Jesus said to the Samaritan woman by the well, God's Spirit, those who worship us, worship in spirit and truth. That we have to worship him with a spirit, our heart involved in it, but truth also. The way that God has prescribed to us. And so as you look at it, Saul had changed the pattern. He wanted to change the pattern, and God was not happy with that one bit. And so we have to let God be God. And so we may not make the same mistake that Saul did. Try to change because we like something else. So we think it's more expedient to do something else. And the final thing is, as far as we need to be content where we're going. Where are we headed? An example of this here is the Israelites. The Israelites that God had brought them out of Egypt. Brought them out of Egypt, Mount Sinai. They had seen the 10 plagues. They had seen the parting of the Red Sea. And here they're at Mount Sinai. And what happens? They're complaining. And not only that, but also they decide we want to do what? Well, let's just look over Acts 7, verse 38. On down. And that passage says, this is he who was in the congregation in the wilderness with the angel spoke to him on Mount Sinai. Talking about Moses, obviously. And with our fathers, the one who received the living oracles to give to us, whom our fathers would not obey, but rejected. And then the next line here, and in our hearts they turned back to Egypt. Saying to Aaron, make us gods to go before us. As for this, Moses brought us out of the land of Egypt. We do not know what has become him. And they made a calf in those days, our sacrifice to the idol, and rejoiced in their works in their own hands. And the key there is their heart, they want to go back to Egypt. If not literally, at least spiritually, they wanted to go right back to Egypt and start doing the same things they had seen around them, and that is the idolatry all around them. God was taking them out of Egypt, out of slavery, out of bondage, and they're headed to the land of Canaan. And they decided, we want to go back to Egypt. They weren't content where God took them. And the application to that is sometimes people obey the gospel, but their hearts may still be in the world. And that is, they still want to please the world. They still want to do things that the world are doing. Maybe can be involved in the sins of the world. And there's a conflict there that, as we said in the sermon on Mount this morning, that you can have one master. And God's got to be it. He doesn't share his people. And so we must be content to live and serve God. To do things that he says do and strive to go to heaven. That's where we're at. And as far as our goal in life, in Hebrews 13 verse 5, Let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have. For he himself said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. You know, be content, be godly people, be people that worship and serve God in the way he prescribes. Because as we go through life, there becomes a reality. And that is how many things are temporary. How many things you really thought was so important. I remember growing up, I was so much into sports. And I still like watching sports. I still like watching some on television. But I mean, everything was sports. Football, baseball, basketball, hockey, whatever sport there was, that was the key. And then you start realizing, next year they don't have a new champion. And then you're at that, somebody else new. And so you realize, this year's champion is just this year's champion. Next year they're gone. And a lot of life's like that, and that is, things are so temporary. For ourselves, what's important to us. And that's what's important, that's the eternal part. And so we are blessed to have the goal of heaven before us. And we should never take our eye off that goal. So this is a lesson on contentment. And we always need to keep in mind what's really important in life. I appreciate you listening so well tonight.